Welcome to the Earth First Update, bringing you all the environmental news you can use for over 20 years. I'm Uncle Dennis, here in the studios of Free Radio Santa Cruz, 101.3 FM and www.freakradio.org, on Thursday, May 10th, 2018. I'd like to ask you to please have a pencil and paper handy so you can take down names, addresses, emails, web pages, phone numbers, whatever it takes so you can take action for the environment. Let's start with announcements. From the Earth First Newswire, greetings from the Mitol Action Training Camp crew. We're having another forest defense training camp. We will be gathering from the 24th through the 27th of May. You could RSVP for directions. Come hang out, learn tons of cool stuff, and get plugged in with your local forest defense campaigns. This event will be taking place in the Mitol River Valley, land we recognize was stolen from the indigenous Mitol people. Workshops and discussions will include strategic nonviolent direct action, know your rights and security culture. There'll be a plant walk, there'll be tree climbing training and knots, trauma-informed care, co-counseling, ground truthing, navigating in the mountains, herbal first aid, and tarpology. This camp is in support of the ongoing old-growth forest defense on Rainbow Ridge. For at least 20 years, forest defenders have climbed trees, blocked logging roads, and locked themselves to logging equipment to stop the destruction of these ancient trees. The campsite will be ADA accessible. For other accessibility needs, please include them in your RSVP, and we'll do our best to help you. Help us co-create an inclusive, safer space where people feel good about addressing oppressive behaviors to heal and unlearn them. In solidarity, the MATC organizers, and you can find out more at Mitol Forest Defense. And they say RSVP, but they don't include an email address. You'll have to figure it out. The Blue Mountains Biodiversity Project is inviting folks out for their celebratory camp out at Walton Lake in Oregon in the Ochoco National Forest on June 9th this year. They're celebrating the Blue Mountains Biodiversity Project, and our dedicated attorneys Tom Bouchel and Jess Bulls recently stopped the Forest Service plan from logging old-growth forest at Walton Lake for the second time. We're inviting people to learn about and enjoy this ecologically important and unique area with us and celebrate that the forest around the lake is still standing. They'll be camping in the Walton Lake Recreation Area in the Ochoco National Forest. Limited spaces are available at our group campsite, so please let us know as soon as possible if you'd like to camp with us at the group site. You can email paula.e.hood@gmail.com. That's paula.e.hood@gmail.com to RSVP. Individuals may need to reserve private campsites once the group site spaces are taken. We will also have a dispersed campsite outside of the designated recreation area where people are welcome to join us. Karen Coulter, the director of the Blue Mountains Biodiversity Project, will be leading a walk midday on June 9th around Walton Lake. Then there'll be a potluck dinner and camp out in the evening. We are planning to be out of the campground by 11 a.m. on the 10th. That's all happening at Walton Lake on June 9th. And once again, to RSVP, it's paula.e.hood@gmail.com. And Oregon, a little bit of punk and a little bit of country, a benefit for the Earth First Journal and the Rough and Ready Mobile Kitchen. We're moving out of Florida, and we need your help to get the Earth First Collective across the country to Oregon. Well, us here in the wild southern Oregon have been talking a lot about how the journal should move to our neck of the woods and all that. It got to the point where it seemed like we ought to do our part and get the journal out of Dodge before the next hurricane and raise them some money. So join us Friday, May 11th from 8 to midnight for a raucous night of anarchy, punk, guitars, and banjos as we celebrate the spring and all the rad projects we have going for us. And the spot will be in the G-Spot, which is in Kirby, Oregon, in the gorgeous Illinois Valley. They'll have another one on May 25th, but this one is on the evening of May 11th. That's Friday, tomorrow night, if you're getting this on Thursday, at the G-Spot in Kirby, Oregon. Hope you folks have fun out there. Attention, ex-wives and girlfriends of Wisconsin hound hunters. The Wolf Patrol will pay you $1,000 for videos of your ex's hunting violations. From the Wolf Patrol, we began a campaign targeting Wisconsin hound hunters in February of 2018, whose own videos published on Facebook depict graphic and illegal animal cruelty, which has led the Department of Natural Resources criminal investigation. We are now soliciting the public for other video and photographic evidence of animal cruelty committed against Wisconsin's wildlife over the past 3 years. Wolf Patrol will pay $1,000 for any video or photograph depicting Wisconsin hound hunters engaging in illegal activities such as allowing hounds to maul and kill coyotes, raccoons, or other wildlife. If the video or photos you provide result in a criminal conviction, you'll get your $1,000. Here's how you do it. To make a claim, please contact the Wolf Patrol. Their email, teamwolfpatrol@gmail.com. That's teamwolfpatrol@gmail.com. Or you can go to Wolf Patrol on Facebook. And take action. Tell the California Department of Fire and Forestry to deny Green Diamond plans to log marbled murrelet habitat. Green Diamond Resource Company is refusing to appropriately map well-known marbled murrelet habitat and is refusing to accept recommendations from the California Department of Fish and Wildlife to protect suitable nest trees and stands associated with known occupied marbled murrelet habitat. Naturally, Green Diamond would rather clear-cut the marbled murrelet habitat instead. Astoundingly, the California Department of Forestry is siding with Green Diamond and is poised to approve THP-1-17-124-HUM, located near Maple Creek and Big Lagoon. In the absence of required mapping and protection of the marbled murrelet habitat as required by CDFW, and over CDFW's official non-concurrence with all CAL FIRE's recommendation to approve the THP and allow the logging. Stand up for marbled murrelets. Come help us stand with up against Green Diamond and CAL FIRE. Tell CAL FIRE they must deny Green Diamond's THP-1-17-124-HUM according to state law and the state forest practices rules. And if you go to the Environmental Protection Information Center's website, you can make comments there. That's wildcalifornia.org. And in Switzerland, we read that fence has been damaged to free some deer in this story from Biteback, reported anonymously. We have destroyed the pen of a red deer farm in Switzerland in the canton of Lucerne. In the pen, there were 50 live red deer. We hope that they were able to escape. There are forests next to the pen. However, deer are very shy, but our focus was economic damage. The fence is the most important investment of deer farmers, and it costs several tens of thousands of Swiss francs to build the fences or to rebuild them. If you put them back up, we will be back. Signed, Animal Liberation Front. And Operation Ornery Birds rescues birds from trafficking in this story by Phil Kloer, on Mother Nature Network. Once they were locked up and abused, and now they're free. About 130 birds were released in April from Florida's River of Grass by U.S. Fish and Wildlife Service officials and partners at Everglades National Park headquarters near Homestead, Florida. The birds had been bought by undercover agents from illegal trappers and traffickers and seized in a series of arrests in the days leading up to the release. Flying off into the morning were indigo buntings, painted buntings, rose-breasted grosbeaks, northern cardinals, house finches, and clay-colored sparrows. The long-running undercover operation was dubbed Operation Ornery Birds, a spin on the video game Angry Birds. It was a joint operation of the U.S. Fish and Wildlife Service's Office of Law Enforcement and the Florida Fish and Wildlife Conservation Commission, with support from the Department of Homeland Security, Customs and Border Protection, Air and Marine Division, the U.S. Postal Inspection Service, and the U.S. Attorney's Office for the Southern District of Florida. Today is a particularly joyous moment for all of us in the conservation community, said Park Deputy Superintendent Justin Unger. I am thrrilled that our more than 1.5 million visitors to the Everglades National Park can once again see these birds fly free in their native habitat. The bottom line is that these activities boil down to money, said U.S. Fish and Wildlife Service resident agent in charge David Farrow. They're making money from illegal trafficking and trafficking these federally protected migratory songbirds. These people are having real impacts on the resources. Prior to the release, six people were charged with multiple violations of the Migratory Bird Treaty Act. This year marks the centennial anniversary of the 1918 Landmark Act that protects migratory birds by prohibiting the hunting, possessing, killing, buying, selling, importing, or exporting of the birds. And in England, anti-club hunt activists exposed cruelty to fox cubs in this story found in the Earth First Journal and originally from BBC. Five people were charged with animal cruelty offenses after the BBC broadcast pictures appearing to show fox cubs being taken into a kennel of hunting hounds. The police investigation began after anti-hunting activists installed hidden cameras at the Southern Herefordshire hunt kennels in 2016. The video appears to show a man then dumping a dead fox cub in a bin. Activists say the cubs were used to give hounds a taste for killing. Campaigners had been expecting to protest outside a police station later this week over how long the investigation was taking. Detective Inspector Jonathan Roberts of the West Mercia Police said the two women aged between 29 and 54 would face multiple charges of animal cruelty. This follows a complex investigation in South Herefordshire. The individuals will appear at Birmingham Magistrates Court on Tuesday, May 15th, he said. Cases of animal cruelty are treated very seriously by West Mercia Police, and we actively seek to protect animals from cruelty and to prevent their suffering. And thousands of rare tortoises have been rescued from dealers in Madagascar in this story written by Lovasua Raberi, as found on Reuters. Nearly 11,000 endangered tortoises found dehydrated and hungry in a house in Madagascar are being coaxed back to life by a team of U.S. veterinarians. The radiated tortoises, prized by dealers for their beautiful shells, are so dry that some of them had to be soaked in water for weeks, said Susie Bartlett from the Wildlife Conservation Society based in New York's Bronx Zoo. Others had to be injected with rehydration fluids and in some cases antibiotics and painkillers, she added. Police found them in a house on the island last month, arrested three people, and called in experts. Bartlett and colleagues spent days working in 100-degree Fahrenheit heat at a care facility in one of the tortoise's natural habitats, the spiny forests on the island's southwestern coast. "We got poked and scratched by spiny branches when calling through to access the animals," said Bartlett. "Some have died, but thousands of others are getting better. It is unlikely they will be released back into the wild anytime soon because they would just be recaptured by poachers." The turtles are prized as delicacies in some part of Asia and pets in other areas, Bartlett added. Writing was by Maggie Frick and editing by Andrew Heavens of the Thomson Reuters. And here's your update from the field from the Buffalo Field Campaign. Dear supporters of the buffalo, lovers of all wild things, what might I say to you in these crazy times? Words of inspiration directly from the banks of the Madison River, this sanctuary of wilderness, this migratory path, this place of nurturing full of beauty and grace. Yesterday, as I have for the last 18 years, my wife Justine and I, along with Stephanie, walked the northwest bluffs of the Madison River following the buffalo trace created over centuries of buffalo meandering to their ancestral birthing grounds on Horse Butte. We marvel, so many memories, both painful and blessed, of following their tracks and scat. I'm reminded of old bumper stickers. Bring back the bison, sing back the swan, and buffalo poop all over this land. I pluck clumps of buffalo hair from tree sides and stuff it in a pocket, a habit started 18 years ago, sniff sage and marvel at the white pelicans sailing over the river. We hear a sandhill crane off in the distance. When I first started coming here, there was barbed wire cattle grates and capture facilities, weeks on end throughout winter and spring, where I witnessed the continued brutality against this unique herd, all in the name of bison management plan. Today, these very lands There are no helicopters, no men on snowmobiles, horses or ATVs, no running of newborn calves for tens of miles, no. Today is birdsong and fairy slippers. An eagle perched on a standing dead tree, the river reflected in his eyes as he takes it all in, as do I. We continue to marvel, endless pressure endlessly applied. We feel the fruits of our labor, of your labor, and your support over the last two decades. This is our third spring enjoying this wild place without the disruption of helicopters and livestock authorities. We whisper, almost afraid to say it aloud. This quietness is still new to us, the wounds of the past still fresh. This landscape continues to heal. Yes, we continue at the blessing that is today, to be on these banks, to be walking this trace towards the peninsula, knowing the buffalo are free to be. This, what this greater Yellowstone ecosystem is close to what it used to be, a full complementary of predator and prey, of winged and four-legged wolf tracks in the dirt. We arrive at the place where the trap used to be. Below the edge of the lake lay 12 mamas, bellies swollen with new life to come, eagles dancing overhead, talons locked, the beauty of freedom. This is our dharma, this is our practice, to be on this land, to listen to her stories and the bones of the living and the dead, to embrace the simplicity, each step of prayer. For the Buffalo, Roman Sanchez, Buffalo Field Campaign's Board of Directors. And Maasai herders have been driven off the land to make way for luxury safaris, a report says in this story from The Guardian, as written by Jonathan Watts. The Tanzanian government is putting foreign safari companies ahead of Maasai herding communities as environmental tensions grow on the fringes of the Serengeti National Park, according to a new investigation. Hundreds of homes have been burned and tens of thousands of people driven from ancestral lands in the Lo Liondo in the Rorongoro district in recent years to benefit high-end tourists and a Middle Eastern royal family, says the report by the California-based think tank the Oakland Institute. Although carried out in the name of conservation, these measures enable wealthy foreigners to watch or hunt lions, zebra, wildebeest, giraffes, or other wildlife, while authorities exclude local people and their cattle from watering holes and arable land, the Institute says. The report released today highlights the famine and fear caused by biodiversity loss, climate change, inequality, and discrimination towards indigenous groups. The Maasai land was to run forever, uses previously unpublished correspondence, official documents, court testimonies, and first-person testimony to examine the impact of two firms, Thompson Safaris, based in the United States, and Utterlo Business Corporation, based in the United Arab Emirates. It says Thompson's sister company, Tanzania Conservation Limited, is in court battle with three Maasai villages over the ownership of 12,617 acres of land in Lo Liondo, which the company uses for safaris. One Maasai quoted in the report said Thompson had built a camp in the middle of their village, blocking access. Imagine a stranger comes by and constructs a big building in the center of your home, reads the testimony. Our livestock cannot go to the watering hole, and there is no other route for the villagers or their livestock. The report says villagers have been driven off, assaulted, or arrested by local police, park rangers, or security guards. The restricted access to land has made the Maasai more vulnerable to famine during drought years, the report says, noting appeals that locals have made for government to change policies because of growing numbers of malnourished children. A Maasai villager contacted by the Guardian said access remained blocked and that uniformed agents had beaten, threatened, tied up, or driven off pastoralists as recently as December. Thompson strongly denies these accusations. It says Tanzania Conservation Limited employs 100% Maasai staff, allows cattle on the property to access seasonal water, and works with local communities and the governments to conserve savanna, improve access to water, and formulate a sustainable grazing policy. The company blames past conflicts on NGO activists who say they stirred up villagers and led to staff being assaulted by young warriors armed with clubs, spears, knives, and poison arrows. These interventions have been played out to attract attention, provide stories, and to disrupt the working relationship between the company and communities on the ground, Rick Thompson, a director of Tanzania Conservation, wrote in an email to The Guardian. In these events, the endangered staff have a protocol of disengaging any way they can to avoid escalation and reporting to the authorities any situation where any people or property are physically threatened. These situations have been rare, and no such events have occurred for the past 4 years. He said the company was not connected to government evictions of illegal residents in the national park, which is reserved for wildlife. The report also claims Maasais have been driven off land as a result of government ties with Otterlo Business Corporation, which organizes hunting trips for the loyal family of the United Arab Emirates and their guests who fly into a custom-built landing strip in Loliondo. Since Otterlo was first granted 400,000 acres of land for hunting, the government has mounted successive eviction operations. The company has warned the area needs greater ecological protection because the herds are increasing while water sources are drying up due to climate change. Despite past government promises that the Maasai would never be evicted from their land, the report notes Serengeti National Park rangers burned 114 traditional homes in 2015 and another 185 in August of last year. Along with other demolitions, local media report more than 20,000 Maasai have been left homeless. Maasai protests and international outcry and domestic allegations of corruption have forced a reconsideration of this policy. In November of 2017, the tourism minister revoked the hunting license of Otterlo, suspended the state director of wildlife, and ordered investigations into the links between foreign films and former officials. But the authorities appear divided. Locals told The Guardian this week that Otterlo continues to operate safari tours in Loliondo to the detriment of the villagers. Lawyers representing the Maasai communities in a court claim over the land said the policies of the government were tilted toward foreign tour companies. These evictions are not justified because more and more land is being taken away from the villages without due process or compensation, even though they have legal title, said lawyer Rashid S. Rashid. And corals, sponges, and underwater canyons get new protections off the West Coast. In this press release from Oceana, late yesterday, the Pacific Fishery Management Council unanimously voted to protect more than 140,000 square miles of seafloor habitat, including corals, sponges, and rocky reefs off the U.S. West Coast. Once implementing regulations are issued by NOAA Fisheries, the Council's action will more than double the spatial extent of seafloor protections off the U.S. West Coast. Deep-sea coral gardens, sponge beds, underwater canyons, and high-relief structures like rocky reefs provide homes for commercially and recreationally important fish species, including more than 90 species of rockfish off of California, Oregon, and Washington. Coral and sponges also provide habitat for a myriad of other ocean creatures, including octopus and sea stars. Living structures on the ocean floor, like corals and sponges, provide nurseries, food, and shelter essential for the survival and productivity of important commercial and sport fish species like rockfish and lingcod, said Susan Murray, Oceana's deputy vice president for the Pacific. The council's action will ensure these spectacular seafloor habitats can continue to sustain healthy fisheries and support other ocean creatures into the future. And environmental groups ask the feds to protect a threatened western Texas lizard in this story written by Kia Collier of the Texas Tribune. Over the objections of the oil and gas industry, two environmental groups are asking the federal government to protect two tiny West Texas reptiles amid the failure of a state-crafted plan to conserve it. The Center for Biological Diversity and Defenders of Wildlife petitioned the U.S. Fish and Wildlife Service on Tuesday to list the dunes sagebrush lizard as threatened or endangered under the Federal Endangered Species Act. The agency proposed listing the sand-colored critter as an endangered species back in 2010, primarily due to loss of habitat from oil and gas drilling and ranching operations in the Permian Basin, an oil-rich region that spans western Texas and southeastern New Mexico. But industry groups complained that an official listing, which would have severely restricted development in areas inhabited by the species, would hinder oil and gas production at a time when new drilling technologies are bringing new life to old oil fields. After that, then-Comptroller Susan Combs, wielding a newfound oversight of endangered species, worked closely with the oil industry and others on a plan to protect the threatened lizard, recruiting a variety of energy companies as participants. But the controller's office, now led by Glenn Hagar, has had to go back to the drawing board as industry participation hasn't been as extensive as expected. The success of the so-called Texas Conservation Plan has also been undermined by some of the industry's most important suppliers. Last August, Robert Gulley, the head of the Comptroller's Division of Economic Growth and Endangered Species Management, warned the Fish and Wildlife Service that the companies that mine the fine-grained sand that oil and gas producers use for hydraulic fracturing posed a direct threat to the plan. Gulley, a renowned expert on environmental law and endangered species, whom Hagar hired to oversee the office's Endangered Species Division in 2015, said that more than a dozen frac sand companies were planning mining operations in four Texas counties that are home to prime dune sagebrush lizard habitat. The plan, which Combs oversaw through 2015, has failed to conserve the lizard, the Center for Biological Diversity and Defenders of Wildlife said in a news release on Tuesday. Dune sagebrush lizards have waited too long for federal protection. They desperately need to survive, said Chris Nagano, a senior scientist for the Center for Biological Diversity. The only reason these rare lizards aren't protected is political interference by Susan Combs and the oil and gas industry, which is rapidly destroying the animal's habitat. Combs is now acting Assistant Secretary for Fish, Wildlife, and Parks for the U.S. Department of Interior. And unfortunately, that's all the time we have for the Earth First Update this week. The Earth First Update is presented every Thursday evening here on Free Radio Santa Cruz, 101.3 FM and www.freakradio.org at 9 p.m. You can tune in for a rebroadcast of this show tomorrow afternoon at 3 p.m. That's Friday at 3 p.m. as part of our Environment Friday programming. You could also listen to WMNB 107.1 in North Adams, Massachusetts, Fridays at 5:30 in the morning, KBOG 97.9 in Bandon, Oregon, Fridays at 10 a.m., KRFP 90.3 in Moscow, Idaho, Wednesdays at 3 p.m., WLSL 92.7 in Dade City, Florida, Sundays at noon, KOWA 106.5 in Olympia, Washington, Saturdays at 7 a.m., You can also listen to KHCF 89.9 in Morgan Hill and Gilroy, California, KGIG 104.9 in Modesto, California, KPHD 93.3 in Modesto, California, and Berkeley Liberation Radio 104.1 in Berkeley, California. You can always go to radio4all.net, that's radio the number 4all.net, where you can listen online or download this or previous editions of the Earth First Update anytime you want to. Please ask your local nonprofit community radio station to air the Earth First Update every week. It is free to download and broadcast. The Earth First Update is a production of Earth First Radio and produced at the studios of Free Radio Santa Cruz. I'm Uncle Dennis. I want to thank you for listening, and please tune in next week for another edition of the Earth First Update.